poverty reduction is an incredibly important goal. But at the same time, we estimate that during the rollout alone, this program may have caused something like 2.5 million dropouts.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. India's National Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme, I think we're going to call that NREGS, it's less of a mouthful, introduced in 2006, is the largest workfare program in the world. We assume workfare has positive effects on poverty, it has positive effects for the people that have jobs because of it, but what is the impact on their families? Manisha Shah at UCLA and Bryce Millett-Steinberg at Brown have examined the general equilibrium effects of the scheme and what that implies for the long-term impact of workfare. And Bryce joins me today. Welcome, Bryce.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Let's talk about the scheme to start with. Why was it necessary?
The NREGA Act, which was passed in 2005, was a culmination of a lot of smaller schemes that had existed throughout the country over the years. It's broadly an anti-poverty program, so it's meant as a way to get money to rural poor households. It's a really large program, so it accounts for around 10% of the total Indian federal budget. And so you can think of this as just kind of a way to try to give money to people who are in very, very poor households.
What precisely does the NREG scheme offer for men and women?
What it is it's a guaranteed job. So the statute is that it guarantees 100 days of work. In practice, actually, most households get much less than that because of rationing. They offer menial jobs. So think of digging irrigation ditches, building roads for a federally mandated minimum wage. So there's something tricky about that, which is that the federally mandated minimum wage in India is often not followed. Mm-hmm. And so this actually is kind of a raise for many of these people, especially during the lean season, and especially women. This program actually pays the same for men and women, which is pretty much unheard of in these markets. And so even though it's statutorily the minimum wage in India, it's higher than many employers are paying. Not by a ton, but it's not the lowest wage that these people would be offered.
I would imagine that might be popular then. How many people take up this work?
A lot. There's sort of different ways to measure it, but you should think about it on the order of 50 million to 100 million people per year are working for the program.
And what do we know about the impact that it has on poverty? Because that's the whole point of it, isn't it?
Yeah. So actually, the evidence on this is less good than we would like it to be. There's pretty good evidence that it raises wages, typically around 5% nationally when the program is rolled out. But the impacts on poverty are a little bit less clear. The best evidence on this comes from Andhra Pradesh, which is a state in the south of India. And three economists did an experiment. They found that this reduced poverty, which they measured as households having less than 5,000 rupees per month, by about 25%. Now, the caveat to that number is that Andhra Pradesh is a very well-functioning state in India. They have very little corruption, and they just sort of, their bureaucracy just works really well. And so the researchers will say this is probably the biggest impact that we would see. So it's not clear that the national numbers are going to be that high, but just the amount of money that's being pumped out to these households is going to be a pretty significant reduction in poverty in rural India.
And is the way that NREGS works in India consistent with the assumptions we have about how workfare programs have made a difference in other parts of the world?
In some sense, that's a hard question to answer because this is by far the biggest workfare program in the world, and it's definitely the most studied. And so actually, you know, these kinds of programs have gone in and out of fashion over the years. And during the Great Depression, actually, in the United States, there was what's called the Works Progress Administration, which was a very large program that did exactly the same thing, tried to just guarantee work for people. But much of the kind of development programs that have happened in other poor countries are things like conditional cash transfers or other kinds of transfer programs. Workfare has become more popular since the introduction of NREGA, so I think we'll have more evidence on this. But there's actually very little evidence on the impacts of workfare from countries other than India. So mostly if you see studies about workfare, they're about NREGs in India.
Now, poverty reduction, which is the headline, that's clearly good for the whole family. But in this paper, you have looked at a potential negative impact on the children for these families. What is this? What's going on here?
Yeah, so there, when wages go up, kind of two things are going to happen. The first is what we call income effects. So this is what you're talking about, the positive effects of poverty reduction. So families are going to be able to like pay tuition, pay for books, pay for tutors, their kids might eat better. So all that's going to kind of increase education. And it could be even that families that are very close to the subsistence line might need their children to work just so that the family can eat. And if you ease up that constraint, maybe their kid will be able to spend a few more years in school. So that's all the positive of the income effects. But there's another set of effects that could happen when wages go up, which is that it's going to affect what we call the opportunity cost of schooling. Mm-hmm. What this means is if you think about a teenager's choice to go to school or not, the thing that they're typically going to do that's not schooling is work, especially in these poor rural communities in India. And so when you increase the wages, you increase the benefit to dropping out. And so that's going to, in some sense, make schooling more costly. Adolescents aren't supposed to be working for NREGA directly. The legal age limit is 18, although there's some evidence that that might not be super well enforced. But also what's going to happen when NREGA rolls out is the equilibrium wages of the market are going to go up as well, because now if NREGS is paying the federally mandated minimum wage and I as an employer want to hire someone, I'm going to have to pay that wage too in order to get people to come and work for me. Mm. And even inside the household, the value of what we call the shadow wage, the value of people's time inside the household is also going to go up, because now if mom and dad are out working more, then there might be more work to do on the home farm, cooking, cleaning, gathering water, that sort of thing. So all of these things are going to increase the value of time spent outside of school, which might reduce schooling investment.
But how are we going to test this? Because you need data on schooling and be able to link that to the work that the parents are doing.
We need enormous amounts of data. And luckily, these data exist in India in various forms. So the two main data sets that we're going to use for this paper are household surveys. So the first is a survey on employment. And here we see the whole family. And they ask what people are doing each day. What's their primary activity? And they do this for around 40,000 households a year from all over India. The second data set we use is really cool. It's called ASER, the Annual Status of Education Report. So this data is collected by an NGO called Pratham. And it's a basic literacy and numeracy test, and they also collect some information on dropout school enrollment for 500,000 rural children a year in India. So it's this enormous data collection effort. And the goal of it is to try to understand whether kids are learning, basically. Mm. And so we have access to those data. So we can see each year kind of how these test scores change and the enrollment records in that data change as well.
And are you doing this by following particular families, or do you do it in the cross-section?
We do it as a repeated cross-section. So the nice thing for researchers about the way that this program was rolled out is that they didn't actually have the capacity to roll it out to the whole country at once. And so some districts got the program earlier than other districts. This was meant to be based on need, but in practice, it didn't really work that well. So 200 districts got it in 2006. I think another 180 got it in 2007, and the remainder, another 150 or so, got it in 2008. And so we can use that as a natural experiment to look at districts that got the program in different years and see whether the changes in schooling coincide with the change in access to the program.
Now, we have to look at the impacts. First of all, for those older teenage children, not old enough to enroll in the program, but they are old enough to work, even if that is informal. What was the impact for them?
So the headline result is that for these older children, so think sort of 13 to 17 or so, they're about 3 percentage points more likely to drop out and work when NREGS rolls out to their district. This is off a mean of about 30% are working. So you can think of this as about a 10% increase in working for this group. So it's pretty large. The boys are typically dropping out to do market work, so some kind of work for a wage outside the house. Girls typically are switching into domestic work, right? So they're doing more childcare, cleaning, cooking, things like that. And it seems as though they are substituting for their mothers. So if you remember, this program was a particularly large wage increase for women. And actually, it required that 33% of the work slots were reserved for women. Although again, that also didn't always work. And so it was meant in many ways to get women into the labor force. And it was actually pretty successful at that. But the flip side is that these women before the program were doing much of the hard domestic work. And when they went into the labor force to work, the natural substitute inside the household for them were their adolescent daughters. And so the girls were dropping out of school and taking up many of these domestic tasks.
And for children who are below teenage years, is there an impact for them as well?
There's two separate groups. So for the younger school age children, so think like 5 to 12, there was basically no effect, positive or negative. So their test scores didn't really change. Their enrollment rates didn't really change. So either the positive and negative balanced out or they were just sort of unaffected. For the youngest kids, so from in utero all the way up to age 4, we found that more exposure to the program, so if you were exposed during that period of time, so if your parents had access to the program, we found their test scores went up when they were in school. And so this is consistent with earlier research that these income effects are just really important for infants and toddlers and even children in the womb, because at that age, just getting enough calories and nutrients is really, really important for human capital investment.
Can you be confident that these effects are caused by NREGs?
You know, you can never be 100% sure. And I think academics are always the first to caveat their own results. But we're confident for a few reasons. First, because, as I said, we have this kind of really large natural experiment. It actually lends itself really well to being able to see the results in real time. So you can actually just plot the schooling impacts over time in these different districts, the early and later districts. And you can see visually that these schooling impacts really coincide with the onset of the program. The other thing that gives us confidence is that we see these in two different data sets that are collected from different sources and made up of different households. And actually, there's now been other papers. So there's a paper by Lian Sekri that's come out in the World Bank Economic Report that uses India's administrative schooling data, what's called the DICE, and they also find reductions in schooling. So it's always nice when two different papers find the same effects, because it makes you think that it's more likely to be true.
But Bryce, this is obviously an unintended negative consequence. How worried should policymakers be in India, first of all? What can they do about that?
Yeah, this is a really hard question to answer because, of course, poverty reduction is an incredibly important goal. And this program was very successful in many ways at reducing poverty. And so we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? But at the same time, we estimate that during the rollout alone, this program may have caused something like 2.5 million dropouts. So the rollout was 3 years. So it's a really large effect. You know, when we think about what might help, rather than throwing out the whole NREGS program, I think about, are there complementary things that governments can do? So conditional cash transfers have been a way to increase schooling investment in many developing countries. You could think about having childcare programs. So a lot of what we think these girls are doing, the adolescent girls who are dropping out, is childcare for younger siblings. So if you had childcare for NREGS workers or things like that, maybe you could reduce the burden on the household of these other kind of domestic tasks. So thinking about, you know, how do you solve this problem without scrapping what's largely been a pretty successful anti-poverty program?
Clearly, the lesson for policymakers around the world who are thinking of programs like this is to think about this general equilibrium effect and build in these protections from the start.
Yes. I mean, economists, I think, have always been shouting into the wind about general equilibrium effects and being wary of unintended consequences. So we can count this as one of those. But yeah, when you change prices, it's going to change people's behavior. And what this is doing is changing the price of work. And so thinking about how all of the ways in which that can affect people's behavior can help us think about the potential unintended consequences.
That's very interesting, Bryce. It's a small change multiplied by millions of people.
Yes.
Turns into something very significant and important, doesn't it?
Yes, yes. My friends who work in the US are always jealous of those of us who work with Indian data, because we say, whatever your effect is, you can multiply it by a billion. And then it's...
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely, yes. The scheme has been going for some time now. Is it being modified at all? Do you think that from what you have learned and what others have learned, then it can be improved?
I think it can. Political will is difficult. People are worried very much about the corruption. There have been some papers that have shown positive education impacts in very, very small parts of India. And I think the government has chosen to focus on those rather than the multiple papers about the large national negative impacts on education. So I'm not sure that this is top of the agenda for changing the program, but I'm hopeful that they will think about complementary programs that can try to increase schooling, particularly amongst these adolescent girls.
Yes, it is a warning about how these effects can be an unintended consequence of what is otherwise a very progressive policy. Thank you very much, Bryce.
Thank you.
The the paper that we have been talking about, if you want to read more about it and find out more about the data, it is called Workfare and Human Capital Investment, Evidence from India. The authors, as I mentioned, are Manisha Shah and Bryce Millett-Steinberg, and it is forthcoming. Is that correct, Bryce?
I think it might actually be just out now.
It is just out in the Journal of Human Resources. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. If you enjoyed it, subscribe on your podcast platform. You can find us on all the popular platforms these days, so don't miss an episode. Or if you did miss an episode, well, look them up at voxdev.org.